hello everybody out there in Music Video Land, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Music Video Land podcast, brought to you by your super good friends at IMVDB, the Internet Music Video Database. We are the people with too much time on our hands. My name is Adam. I type things into the database, as we've gone over before, for no money. This is episode 110. And then with me, as usual, is Mr. Doug Klinger, also for no money, and also too much time on his hands. Doug?
Hey! Hey, Adam. Thanks for having me.
Good. Yeah, glad to have you back, Doug, for 110 episodes. And then we have, all the way up in northern Canada, above the wall, beyond the wall, I mean, is Mr. Adam Alexander. Adam, how many pairs of J's do you own, and be honest?
Three.
Okay, and you keep them clean, right? That's what you're supposed to do.
They are always clean.
Nice. So we have on the podcast today two for the price of one special guests. Mr. Zach Stoltz, who is a amazing director who we have had on the blog before, and we'll link to some of his article or the interviews on the blog in the show notes. But he had a video that was co-directed with none other than Daniels this week. Mr. Zach Stoltz, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And also joining us on the podcast is someone who is also part of a music video this week. Actor and sometimes stunt coordinator, John Lake. John, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you. Nobody's ever asked me that before.
I'm just a nice guy.
Thank you.
I am also going to ask how you're doing now.
Oh, thank you. No, I'm doing all right. Well, you can't ever answer that realistically, right? Because if you get into the stuff, then we'll be here. It'll be a therapy session.
Yeah, forever.
But
entertaining podcast.
This is not going to be a music video podcast. It's going to be a podcast about feelings.
That's right.
Which is cool. It's actually what they all are anyway. We just talk about our feelings a lot and just like put it in a shell of music videos, but really it's just about our souls.
We wanted to have Zach you on because this week you released a video that was co-directed by Daniels, and I don't think any other videos in our database are, Mark, I don't know, Doug, help me out here, are co-directed by Daniels, and that is the Tongues, or Joywave Tongues video.
Now this I was curious right off the bat about that because Daniels, this is such a bad joke. I can't believe I'm saying it. Daniels is two people and you're one. So did you technically direct 30% of this video or 50%?
I would say that I directed about 30%, maybe 35%. I don't know, 33? That's about right.
Yeah, I think that would be how it breaks down. So even parts between the three of yous.
Yeah, so the way that it came about is, they were working on a bunch of projects, and Dan Kwan called me up and just said that because we had worked together before on stuff and felt that we had similar sensibilities, he wanted me to come on to help them out with it because they couldn't devote necessarily all their attention to it, and they knew that I would be able to bring something to the team.
So they already had the concept ready?
Yeah, so the concept was all theirs, but it was like a lot of their stuff. It started out very loose, I think, and it was, we have naked hippies, then hunters shoot them with clothes, and there was a bit about a love story, a monster, and a documentary crew that was going through, but beyond that, there weren't very many details in place. So what we did is I would meet up with them and we just grab lunch or something and we would really just talk through it. And I had been on set with them for Turn Down for What, just to get a sense of how they directed, because that was happening right before the Tongues video. And it was interesting because my style is, even though we have similar sensibilities, a lot of the time our styles of directing are very different, because I think it's very different when you're one person versus two people directing, and I've never co-directed anything, so it was interesting to become part of a team, and I think it was easier for them to have a third member of the team to sort of lighten the burden, and it did take it from, like, before they would be directing 50-50, and now they only had to worry about, you know, that 33%. So it lightened the load enough and then added another member to the team, but for me it was figuring out how to work as a part of a team, so that was a little hairy at times, but I think it worked out for the best.
Now, there are, like, as you mentioned, naked hippies in this video, and who just look like they're having a good time before the clothes, I wouldn't say clothes hunters, because it's kind of the reverse of hunting, I guess. Yeah. They're kind of blurred out in a clever way, but
that is not our original intention. The version that was released as the official video is the censored version, and we will be uploading the uncensored version pretty soon, I think. I need to talk to them about it. But originally, we were supposed to have a simultaneous release. I don't know if this should be talked about, actually, because
it should be, yes. Contractual stuff.
But originally, we were going to have a simultaneous release, and then I think they got a little bit nervous about there being naked people, because it's Hollywood Records, which is owned by Disney. And so there was a lot of stuff that happened, and so we didn't get a simultaneous release, and they just released the censored version, but didn't have any indication that there was an uncensored version.
So there's a possibility of like an uncensored version coming out at some point.
Oh yeah, very soon. It's going to be whatever we upload to our respective Vimeo accounts. I don't think it'll get an official platform, though, like a YouTube thing with the uncensored version.
And with something like that where you... Because there's a lot of them. It seems like there's 15 naked hippies. I mean, it seems like it's a kind of like mm-hmm. an odd set to be on with 15 naked people in a forest.
You would think. But by the end of the day, after the first day, the person who was most uncomfortable on set was the guy playing the Papa Hunter character. and we were worried because auditions for that video were dreading them. It was just me and Dan Kwan for that. Dan Schneider was there for some of it, but it was mostly just me and Dan Kwan. And the way that they like to run auditions is very, very fun, and they like to do group auditions. So we would just bring in a bunch of people and be like, hey, audition in your underwear, because we don't want you to get completely naked. But it was this bizarre thing where it would just be me and Dan Kwan and someone filming a bunch of girls in their underwear, and then sometimes dudes in their underwear just like dancing and telling them we were like playing games with them. But the thing is, because we did have that structure of making it fun and starting out with these like camp icebreakers, it really set the tone, and then all of a sudden everyone was a lot more comfortable. And I was at one point, we would leave the room when they were changing, and then one time we came back and one girl was just completely naked, and we were like, oh, okay, that just happened. And at first it was a little bit weird, but after a couple of minutes playing icebreakers, it's like, I'm standing next to a naked girl and that I've never met before, and that's fine. And nobody really cared. So,
well, the forest kind of makes it okay, I think. I mean, that kind of mitigates some of it, right?
Yeah, and we had a Jesse Fleece, our AD, had a conversation with everyone before the start of the day, just saying, hey, gonna be lots of naked people, be safe, be respectful, because it's one thing to be in a room in your underwear with me and Dan Kwan, who are very unthreatening individuals, but it's completely different to be on a film set with all this crew. And then, you know, we had that Papa Hunter actor who we auditioned some real creeps who we did not cast, but we were a little worried about him at first just because we didn't know him at all, but he ended up being a real sweet guy, and he was, like I said, the most uncomfortable at the end of the day.
Were some of those icebreaker games, was one of them slow-mo sword fighting?
Yes, it was.
Sweet. I know stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It was a lot of stuff that has been done at OMG in the past.
Oh, okay, sweet. Okay, that makes sense. Except the difference is, instead of children, it's naked adults.
Yeah.
So that's a significant difference.
But those naked adults were once children, so...
That's true. That's true. That's super deep.
So Zach, you worked on a lot of visual effects as well. Did you work on visual effects for the Tongues video, for the Joyway video?
Yes. I did a majority of the effects on that video. I tended to focus on some of the crazier things, like the final shot with the giant monster, and actually most of the clothing monster shots, except for the one where it like shoots all the tentacles out and grabs the gun. Dan Kwan did that and did an amazing job on it. And then the rest of it, I think Scheinert was filming a documentary in Alabama for all of it, so Kwan and I did most of the post on that one.
The ending shot is amazing. It reminds me of like Katamari Damacy video game. Yeah. Are you familiar with that?
Oh yeah. We didn't reference that. We referenced Akira, but I can totally see Katamari as well.
What's the Akira reference?
Just the idea of this monster that just grows out of this one person and gets out of control and just starts destroying everything in its path.
Yeah, I thought of Akira as well. Definitely. That's cool.
You guys have a deeper knowledge of... would it be Japanese?
Yeah.
Yes.
Japanese film and video than I do. My one cultural reference to Japan is Katamari Damacy.
It's a good reference. It's a good game.
That is, yeah.
Mine is Carrie Pomu Pomu, so mine's better.
So, John, you were at... So we talked a little bit about OMG, cameras everywhere, and we'll be talking about that a lot more in the next few podcasts because that will be coming up in... Is it Doug, New York and LA this summer?
Yeah, both in July. New York is... we'll let them announce the dates and then we will confirm them because that's what we do. Tune in next week. We'll have Isaac Ravishankara on talking about OMG 2014. So that'll be super fun for everyone to hear about.
Zach, you were at the 2012 version and didn't meet Doug because Doug was a bashful boy. And
I was still relatively new to the whole group at that point as well. So I was probably pretty shy too.
You guys could have like bonded over that.
But we were too shy.
next time. And Zach did. Zach's like people. I still like look at that video that you edited in 2012 as like because Zach did. If no one is familiar, the Ready Set. You edited the Ready Set video from 2012, right? Which is
like Somerset.
Somerset, same different boys, but
just as youthful
and handsome. But yeah, So those guys, you did that one, a very effects-heavy video, especially for OMG standards.
Yeah, it was just all green screen, and they're like, we filmed a bunch of stuff on green screen. Make it make sense. And I think everyone just looked at me because they knew that I had the visual effects background. At that point, I don't know if I had directed a music video yet, so they're like, effects, Zach, go! And... It was kind of crazy.
Is that how you kind of rolled into directing, basically through doing VFX first?
I was always trying to be a director, and I had directed little shorts and stuff before I did any music videos. And the effects stuff just came out of having to learn how to do things for my own work. So I kind of just found a little niche there, and I had done a ton of motion graphics work out of college, and then like screen replacements on phones for BlackBerry commercials, and then various documentary type things. But then my first introduction to like music videos was actually working with the Daniels because I met them at a Flux event here in LA, and I was just like, "Hey, I'm a random guy. I like your stuff. Can I help you?" And and I gave them my card and never heard from them. And and then, because that was at the point where they were like releasing tons of music videos, and probably everyone wanted to be in that camp. And I made a short called Beard Punch, and that had like a little mini, like for me, viral sort of thing. It got like 100,000 views or something. And then I sent that to them, and they're like, "This is great. We're in Portland shooting the Shins music video. We have a short we need to finish called Pockets. We need help. It's not going to get done. Will you help us?" And I was like, "Yeah, okay." And so I helped him out with Pockets, and it got to the point where they weren't responding to any of my calls because they were busy. And I'm like, "I guess I'll just finish their video." And like, so I just finished this thing and sent it to them. They're like, oh, you did a really good job." And then they brought me on for the Converse video that they did with Mark Foster and A-Track and Kimbra, that 3-for-1 thing. And then Tenacious D after that, and we spent like a week locked in a room together doing Tenacious D, and then at that point their producer sent Beard Punch to an EP that he knew at More Media. The guy got in contact with me and said, "Hey, we want to work with you." And then ever since then I've just been, you know, signed with them as a director, and then I got to direct a video and just kept on directing and then meeting more people who needed effects help.
Yeah, still doing lots of VFX stuff for other folks, right? That's still a
I'm trying to do less, but I'm still doing it. I'm much more selective now about what I take, but I still like to work with good people.
It all started with business card.
Yeah, I don't think that ever. I think it got lost or immediately shredded or something.
But could you? I mean, was it? What kind of business card was it?
It's a really dumb business card that I made for myself. I was trying to figure out what I should put on my business cards one night, and it was like 3 in the morning. I was really tired, and it was one of those sites that was having a deal. And I was looking at all these templates, and I was like, oh. And then there was one with a tuxedo on it, and I was like, great, yeah, this will work. And so I just wrote this thing on this, and I was like, this card has a tuxedo on it. It has nothing to do with me. And then it just said I was a director and After Effects artist, and then it was just really weird looking back on it. I'm like, that's a really dumb card, but it's kind of genius too.
If you have any more copies of that, please take a picture and send it to us, because that'll be the picture of the podcast. There's one image that goes along with that episode.
That's a good one.
The card is even better, though. I used it as like a flirting tool. The back of the card said, "You have a great smile," and then below it said, "You're welcome." And so I would just like give it to girls sometimes, and they'd think it was really cute.
But that was also on the one you gave to Daniels.
Oh, yeah. So okay. I'll give it to anybody. I have never gotten a date out of it.
So Doug and I had a business card where we didn't have enough money to have a business card for each of us. And we went to South by Southwest with a card with both of our information on it and a checkbox that said, like, you talked to Adam or Doug. And it was the most embarrassing thing I think I've ever been part of in my life. I wish we had the tuxedo, is what I'm saying.
It would have been better. We gave those business cards to no one. We got them for ourselves. We talked a little bit about Zach's short film work, and we'll link to some of that in the show notes. I really love the Beard Punch one. And what's the one also where the guy is like reacting to the different sizes of the...
That is In Frame.
In Frame, right? Different sizes of the frame, and then John.
I learned After Effects actually,
and it's awesome. We'll also link that in the show notes. And then John's got some shorts, I guess, rollerblading videos as well. There's a series of what is there five videos each corresponding with a meal.
I think 5, 6, yeah, something like that.
I think there's 5, and John, you are the only person I think that's ever been on our podcast that we have like video of them shaving their own head on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
So I was curious. Is that kind of like the rollerblading, and did that lead to some of your work in music videos?
Kind of not really. I mean, I've been working. I started as a like PA and then moved to a grip. Like freshman year of high school, and so I was just kind of working on stuff since like always, and music videos has always been like my favorite genre for work, so I've just been kind of making them since I was little, and kind of filming skating kind of came hand in hand, so I kind of met up with like a lot of friends that were into filming skate videos, and it kind of just blended together, and I got kind of sick of like classic skate videos, so I'd try to add weird things like shaving my head while on a motorcycle.
and correct me if I'm wrong, because I've seen a lot of skating videos, but I haven't seen like a ton of them. Is rollerblading as opposed to skateboarding, is that more of an anomaly within those types of videos?
Oh yeah, rollerblading's not that cool these days, but skateboarding's really popular and all over the place. But I choose rollerblading because I think it's super fun.
I like I was really excited to see the rollerblading as somebody who is a rollerblading fan. And what point did you choose this is gonna be my like tool of choice?
I mean, I still skateboard and snowboard and like surf and do kind of all of them, but I kind of just really grasped to rollerblading. I think probably around fourth grade was when, maybe fifth grade was when I really started just kind of focusing on that one, just because that's what my other friends were doing. So we kind of just got really into that one thing, but I still like snowboarded just as much, like when the snow was there and everything like that. So I don't know.
and so for the Weightless video, did David come to you with kind of the story ready, with the part for you ready that was going to feature rollerblading, or was that something that kind of came while working on the project?
So that was kind of crazy. So David came to me he mentioned the video, and then he kind of came last second and was like, "Hey, I'd love for you to be in the video." And so we shot most of the video like 2 days, and then we did a pickup day where he's like, like I kind of wanted maybe something like maybe you're rollerblading or skateboarding or biking or something like that. And I was like, well, like I'm definitely the best at rollerblading. So he's like, all right, we'll grab a couple of pickup shots. And it was supposed to just be like a pickup day that we shot for like an hour or two, kind of just kind of not with me, the DP, and David. And it turned into, and like most of that footage, I was like, oh, I bet I'll never even make it into the video. Ended up being like a huge factor, which was a big surprise and pretty cool. So it's definitely not really pre-planned in my mind, but maybe David had that planned the whole time.
He might have been hustling you.
Yeah, I don't know. No, I don't think he was. I think he would have mentioned it right away. But I think
that's the whole point of hustling, is you don't mention it beforehand.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he was hustling me.
Yeah, that's Adam's starting rumors on the podcast about David Alcabelli. And so, but prior to the kind of more heavy involvement of the rollerblading in the project, how did he approach you to be in it, and what was the kind of conversation about the part before that stuff?
Well, he actually told me about the video before he had me in mind for, or maybe he had me in mind, but he didn't want to say. He's like, oh, I want you. I think he wanted someone like, he originally had the mindset for having it set for like age like 15 or 16. So I was like, well, I don't look like I'm like 14 or 15 years old. So he kind of pitched me the idea with that age and mindset. And I really loved the idea and I thought it was great. So we were kind of hanging out one night, grabbing a drink, and he just kind of played the song a few times, gave me the video, and I was like, oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. And then I didn't hear from him for like 2 weeks. I was like, oh, I can't wait to see the video. And then all of a sudden I get a call one night, like pretty much last second, being like, hey, we're changing the age and a little older, and we'd love for you to be in it as the main guy. And I was fully on board. So I was definitely really excited to, so I kind of heard about the idea, not even thinking about myself or the role or anything like that. So it's definitely an interesting perspective into the video.
And we should mention that that video just came out. We're recording this on June 5th. That video just came out yesterday.
Yes.
And that video is Weightless by Washed Out, which just came out yesterday, directed by David Altobelli.
Yes. So
I also wanted to mention a video that you guys recently worked on together, which is Turn Down for What by DJ Snake featuring Lil Jon, which is a, you know, we could call this a popular video. This is one of those ones where like my mom emails me the video and says, have you seen this? And John, you were the stunt coordinator on this video.
Yes.
And then Zach, you worked in VFX with Daniels on this.
Yes.
So I was wondering,
also both in it.
Oh, you guys are in it?
Yeah. My head is in John's lap at the end. In the corner.
We were dancing. I smash a vase over one of my buddies' heads in the scene. Or I smashed two, actually.
Nice. Both of them made it.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. It was a crazy day. It was the most fun day I've ever had on set to date, was the first day of shooting that music video.
Well, I was wondering about that because, you know, I think it's kind of rare to, or it really it must be an interesting experience to be on a video that, like, because when this video came out, it kind of spread like wildfire and was, you know, such a popular topic online. And, you know, when you guys were making this video on set, was there a feeling like, yeah, this is going to be huge? Because, you know, I DJ Snake, obviously Lil Jon is famous. The song has done really well. I think it's like number 4 on the Billboard 100 or something like that, or maybe 5 or 6 up there in the top 10. But were you guys, was there a sense like this is going to be a massive music video?
Yes,
definitely.
It was, I mean, when you're watching the monitor and everyone has tears in their eyes because they're laughing so hard, it's kind of inevitable. And it at one point, it was like I saw the first cut and we were just like, how can we make this, like, get back to that place we were at on set? Because, like, no matter what you think when you see the video, like, nothing can compare to the feeling when you were on set and seeing it all come together. Because I think it was just this thing where everyone was working together, and then all of a sudden you just see these boobs smashing into things on a counter. It's like it worked, you know, like. And but yeah, but I think we definitely got the sense. I remember talking to Jason Cazvardi, the production designer, and just being like, this video is gonna win a bunch of awards.
I wouldn't be surprised if this was up for, like, you know, the Grammys has a second, which I think is one of the most, like, high profile, I guess, in terms of popularity, awards. I would definitely put it in the category for maybe a Grammy nod. That would be pretty sweet. And definitely, I think it'll in the music video awards season, we'll see a lot of appearances of this video for sure.
Do you feel like the video has a lot to do with the track's popularity? Is this an example of that?
It's hard to say whether or not it would have been as popular without the popularity of the track. I feel like it allowed it to reach an audience that wouldn't normally see it.
That's part of what makes it such a great video, though, is that, like, it, they're like, I can't believe this. That somebody who has fans allowed people to make this video for them. Like, it's just, I don't know. I think part of the appeal is that so many people, like, were, there was like a built-in audience who were, like, essentially, like, forced to watch Dan Kwan's penis dance, yes, without kind of signing up for that originally. And that's, like, probably what made it so amazing, for some people. Yeah.
I wanted to ask, you know, in terms of, we had Ari Robbins on the podcast last week, who's a Steadicam operator, and then that's another job where people are aware of it, but they may not know, like, what the particulars of the job are. For a music video like this, John, like, what are you basically in charge of making sure? Is it making sure people stay safe as well as the stunts are executed properly?
Yeah, my main concern always is the safety of, like, everyone on set, especially when, like, the main character, like, Dan is a friend of mine, also the director. Like, I needed to make sure that he was just comfortable and safe because he had so many things going on. So that's my number one concern. And then just, like, the execution of the stunts afterwards. But it was pretty easy because the Daniels have experience with stunt, like, a bunch of experience with stunt work, so they kind of knew generally how they wanted to execute specific gags, and I kind of was there just to make sure that they had more padding and just kind of watched all the corners and things like that. So they made my job very easy and very fun.
So for a shot like, you know, when I think there's a shot where everybody's kind of coming through the roof, that's basically people are coming through the roof, right?
Yeah, that was definitely the most intense stunt of the day. Was we had, like, a fake roof built with, like, kind of just, like, fake, like, ceiling and everything. And Dan Kwan had to get up. And it was, like, last second, too, because on music video sets, you never really have tons of time. So it was like, all right, move on to the next shot. Quick, climb up there. And it's just one of those scenarios of where you have to make sure that, like, it's not, like, the most ideal way to do it, but, like, you're there. You feel comfortable with the person doing it, and you just got to make sure that you make it as safe as possible. And if it gets to that threshold of, you know, it's, we're just gambling too much with this, like, I have no problem saying, like, guys, like, we can't do this. Like, we got to figure out another way. And the Daniels are super talented where they can, I hate to say it, but usually figure out another way, which involves post. But luckily for this, I felt very confident with Dan Kwan kind of coming through the roof. And so he just got up there, got a bunch of hands around him, and he did the smash through, got a bunch of dust in his eyes, and the shot worked out great. And then for everyone else, we ended up just kind of having him climb up the ladder without the fake roof and kind of jumping off into the green screen. I believe Zach Stoltz actually made it look like it was magical. Real.
Made it look real.
Well, that's what, you know, when you say it, you know, if it needs to be passed on to visual effects, it goes to Zach, right? I mean, was there anything that was especially challenging about this video that, you know, you weren't expecting on the VFX side?
I've learned not to really expect a lot of easy things when I work with the Daniels. But nothing was too insane. I think the hardest thing was probably that final shot where they break through into the party, just because that involved, like, having to match this roof tile that wasn't exactly at the right perspective, just because we couldn't really get that in the space. And then, like, sort of extend the ceiling and then have it blend in there and match the lighting as well as we could. So that was probably the hardest thing, but even that wasn't, I wouldn't put it in my top 10 challenges of visual effects in my lifetime.
I think there's a side-by-side of that somewhere in an article I think I saw of the, or some sort of explanation. Doug, you remember that of that specific VFX shot?
Nope.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm making it in my head. There we go. I will put the link to Nowhere in the show notes.
I could have faked it, and but then you wouldn't have found it.
Yeah, thanks for backing me up, Doug.
I'm sorry. I don't even know what you said.
I didn't put anything together showing a side by side, and I did the shot, so maybe it is in your mind.
Did we have?
But maybe not. Maybe they just did it.
I don't think we had behind the scenes on it though either.
That's a shame, okay. Because I would. Oh, I think there was a few pictures of the like the penis operation.
Yeah, wait. I think there is a behind the scenes that I can get behind. Because I've definitely seen footage of Schneider working the penis. That's weird.
I feel like that might be just iPhone.
Yeah, I think someone just. I think maybe John Wong, the producer, shot that on his iPhone, or Brian, the commissioner.
Could be.
I remember people shooting that on their phones, but maybe there was, and we were just ignoring the behind the scenes person because we hate them.
Yeah, there's a hectic day. Sorry.
Do you guys really hate the behind the scenes people? Because
I love behind the scenes people.
No, I'm into it. I think it's fun. Sometimes they get in the way, but the way that I see it, most of the time I'm getting in the way, so it's not a problem. It's just one more person in the way.
Because I have to confess, I have a phobia of sets. Because I always feel like I'm in the way. This goes way back to some bad experiences. We were actually at this. What was the name of this studio that you guys did this in? I forget.
Escarpment.
Escarpment. Yeah, we were there for an Isaac Rentz video. You remember the name of the video? Maybe 2 years or so ago.
Yeah, it was Ryan McNeil, but same production.
Ryan McNeil. Right. There's a lot of
same
Ryans.
More media.
Then you see that. I'll have to cut that out. We were just kind of like there, kind of observing, and Doug was getting some like behind the scenes shots. That I always felt like anywhere I stood, like I was like directly in the way of 15 people.
Yeah. And the looks, we obviously try to get behind the scenes whenever we're in Los Angeles or places where they shoot music videos. And as someone who has shot behind the scenes before, I feel like everyone's always looking at me thinking that I should be helping them do stuff, and makes me feel really uncomfortable. So it's good to know that you guys don't actually hate behind the scenes people, because we've been those.
The one time that behind the scenes got a little intense was actually on the Joyway video, and I didn't really notice it at first because I was in my own directing world, but someone pointed out, they're like, I think Jesse, the AD, was like, is the behind the scenes guy bugging you guys? And we're like, wait, not really, why? And he's like, well, he's just like, anytime you talk, just puts a camera in your face. And we were so self-conscious of it afterwards. It's like every single time we'd open our mouth to just be like, hey, can you move that like a foot? They'd just be like right there in our faces. And it got to the point where we kind of had to ignore him in the van when we were like getting shuttled up to the, it was like broken into two locations on the same ranch. And it's like, he was like, hey, can I talk? And we're like, another time. We're busy.
And so you guys are talking mainly about behind the scenes video, right? Because it was, was Joyce Kim on that site with you?
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
I was trying to think if Joyce was there or not. It was a little bit ago. She could have been. I mean, she
turned on for a while.
Yeah, she's a great behind-the-scenes photographer. And I think just like a really good behind-the-scenes photographer or videographer, you wouldn't notice they were there if you were doing your job. Yeah. They kind of just hang in the back. So that's what I'm saying. I don't know if we had someone or not, but if we did, that means they probably did a really good job.
Joyce shot amazing stills on Joywave, and I didn't even know she was there. And she's my friend, so she's not in the way.
Shoots amazing stills on everything, basically.
Yeah. Joyce is great.
We do not have a credit for her for Turn Down for What, which means she wasn't there.
Oh, yeah. No, that's true. That's true, because Pretty Bird, they just... Judy specifically just fills the website with credits whenever they put a music video up, which is awesome.
Judy would do that.
Judy's so great.
Judy, if you're listening, you would.
Real quick, because we should talk about some of the music videos of the week, but I did want to quickly talk about the unofficial video for Tove Lo Habits. Really quick, because this is an insane video that John made. For $27, I think, and it's an unofficial insane video. And why don't you just talk a little bit about it?
Well, I've been making music videos forever, and I never have budgets for mine, so I just think of music videos all the time. And then whenever one's low enough for a budget, I just make it. And I never it's copyright terrible. I never ask permission for anything, and I don't care if I show anything in it. I'm like, worst comes to worst, they just ask me to take it down. And so I'm hoping that that doesn't happen with this video because it's one of my favorites. I pretty much heard the song on the radio, and by the end of the song, I already had the whole idea storyboarded in my head. And that sounds like it's like, oh, like really talented, but I just was like, no, I'm just going to copy every single line from this song because it's kind of ridiculous. And so I copied that, called, got my roommate. I was like, Mark, you need to be in this video with me. And I actually had my roommate, Jess Dunlap, who's an amazing, talented DP, mention, he's like, oh, I would have loved to shoot this, but I really felt like the video needed to be shot extremely busted. Like I wanted it to look like an extremely like busted, like first music video project, because I feel like with the internet sometimes, like to get people to kind of jump on board, they need to like connect with the video. And so especially with like a comedy video like this, I was like, oh, I just want like the audience to just look at it as what it was, just two friends just going out and quickly shooting a music video in a few hours with just like a funny idea. And it was just like fun and quick and simple. And I was really happy with how it turned out. It came out exactly how I wanted. We're pushing about 600 views last time I checked on YouTube.
644. So it's good that you're doing it. It's getting there. Hopefully we're going to try to send a wave of views because we'll put this in the show notes as well. So anyone who's listening wants to see a super funny video, definitely watch this. Because, yeah, it's very, very hilarious.
There's one shot that I got a comment on where there's a shot of us in front of this weed store, and I knew we were going to get kicked out right away. And so I was like, and there's a lot of choreography I've been seeing in music videos recently, especially by David Wilson. And so I saw, like, I was like, me and Mark, I was like, we need like some, just one little piece of choreography in this verse. And so I was like, we'll just start bouncing our legs to the beat when it goes. So we're in the car outside the weed store, parked in the parking lot. And I'm like, all right, you guys ready? And so I had my camera guy. I'm like, just find a middle frame. Tell us where we're out of it. And I'm going to give us 30 seconds. Is that enough? I'm like, no, I'm going to give us 25. And so I give us 25 seconds. I hit the song, play on the car. We open up the car doors, blare it, and just run out. And he just starts rolling. And like by the time we're like all set up and framed, it's like ready. We had about 2 seconds to take a breath. And then we just walked in, perform it. And if you see the last frame of the music video, is someone opening up the door and kicking us out.
Nice.
That I was gonna say, like, that's pretty much what the gist of the video was. It's just like a bunch of one takes where it's just like, yeah, we got it, let's move on, just quick, short, fun, simple.
It's fun to do it guerrilla style sometimes.
Yeah, so that was one shot in the video you could look at for just like
it seems like a ballsy move trying to shoot in front of a weed store because they seem like a place that doesn't like riffraffy and stuff going on outside of their doors.
In the first video that I did, it actually got shelved, but we shot in a Home Depot with an Epic.
You just went in, you just rolled in there.
Yeah, what we did is we like strapped it. We had it on a hi-hat and strapped it to one of those like lumber carts, because the video was about people who get really sad because they see the saddest video that was ever made, and then they start crying, and then they get really inspired to build sheds, and they start building sheds. I'll send you guys a link. It's a gem, but it got, the band didn't want anything funny after saying they wanted something funny. So we just like strapped an Epic to this wood like lumber cart and just rolled in through the front door. And just had people pushing the cart, and we had everyone there do it. And at one point, my DP, Andrew Whitaker, was like, we need it to be heavier on the end. So he like stood on the end of the cart and like bent over. So people walking by just saw this dude like bent over, this like 6'4" guy bent over a wood cart getting rolled through the store, rolling an Epic. And
so for people who are not familiar, how big is an Epic? This isn't like a compact camera.
I mean, our rig was, I don't know, like the size of two toasters. I don't know. It wasn't small. It was definitely
two toasters. To his credit, that's a really difficult question to describe. Like, describe the size of this thing. Two toasters. It is pretty good. It's certainly not a GoPro. It's not a GoPro by any means.
No, it's like 30 GoPros. It's like a 30 GoPro two toaster deal.
That's good.
I think all the best
explanation that I could have bought
in the future.
It's weird because I pictured 30 GoPros and 2 toasters as being completely different sizes, but both I picture as being the same size as an Epic. So that's really weird.
with the lenses and stuff, like just the Epic is like a toaster.
Right, and the other stuff is where the other toaster comes into play. Yeah. Well, that makes perfect sense. It's good. So let's talk about some of the videos from the week. Yes. That's a good segue. Toasters.
That was an excellent segue, Dad.
They probably shot Ariana Grande Problem on a couple of toasters.
I'd say that's at least a 4 toaster deal.
There's a bunch of toasters.
We need like a toaster like icons on the site for how many toasters we give it.
Rating scale, it's toasters. It makes absolutely no sense unless people listen to this episode. So that's cool.
So yeah, let's talk about Ariana Grande, Problem featuring Iggy Azalea and Big Sean, because this was right now Iggy Azalea is having a good time because Fancy featuring Charlie XCX is number 1 on the Billboard Hot 100, and then Problem is number 2. I think that's still the case right now.
It was the case at a point, if it isn't currently.
Right. So I actually didn't. I was surprised to see this video come out.
It came out last week.
It came out last week, but because I just kind of assumed this had a video and I didn't see it because maybe it wasn't very good. I didn't know that because it's rare now. I mean, we see so many videos that the video comes out, like Talk Dirty, you know, the Jason Derulo Talk Dirty video directed by Colin Tilley. That video came out 5 months or so before that song even charted. So we see a lot of videos that come out that are kind of sleepers, and then the track builds. But this was a case where the track just went crazy, and then we get the video afterwards. So it was a huge release on a Friday, directed by the Young Astronauts. And the kind of concept of this video is, I would describe it as if anybody's seen the Flight of the Conchords Girlfriend's video, which features the songs Fou de Fafa and A Kiss Is Not a Contract, that kind of references and parodies like the Sergei Gainsbourg, you know, Ballad de Melody Nelson videos from the 60s. It's kind of that aesthetic. It's definitely going for like a 60s French aesthetic, both in the set and the styling, not just of Ariana Grande, but definitely Iggy Azalea.
Yeah, I can guarantee, like, this video's got, like, 13 million views right now. Everybody who's watched this was like, oh, Flight of the Conchords.
Right? Well, maybe, I mean, did you guys get, like, a kind of, like, a French New Wave kind of feel to it?
I also thought that it was a very 60s sort of feeling thing. I was trying to place the decade because I don't really watch old things. And I was like, wait, 60s. I nailed it.
You definitely nailed it, yeah.
I have this talent. This can be edited out if you want to, because it has nothing to do with music videos. But I have this weird talent of placing the year a movie was made within like 2 years, usually one, and I'm usually right on. It's crazy.
How about James Cameron's The Abyss?
The Abyss? 84?
Oh, I'm sorry. It was 88.
Ah, well, there you go. Broke me. Edited it all out.
Let's do it again. It says 88.
Yeah, let's go. So how about The Abyss?
In his defense, he needs to see the actual song, and then he can nail it.
That is true. It's usually when I'm watching.
Just naming the movie won't work.
Right, fuck Adam. Adam was so ready with that, too. It's like, oh, yeah? What about The Abyss? And it's like, screw it up.
I haven't seen The Abyss since I was like 9. It's not fair. For a movie that I haven't seen in so long, within 4 years is pretty good.
That's good. Yeah, no, that was unfair. I realized that was unfair.
Talk about music videos.
Adam, what were we going to say about the problem?
Oh, no, I was just going to kind of back you up on the 60s groove, but we've definitely hammered that point home. It's definitely Austin Powersy looking.
Well, that's a good reference.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I did.
It definitely has it has a film grain on it too, which is interesting. You don't see that a lot. It's definitely like, it's not like the iMovie film grain filter or whatever. It's definitely something, because I know they obviously didn't shoot it on something and then age it, but it definitely is going for that look. I have one issue with this video. I think it's a fantastic video. I was really excited to see this when it came out because I love Iggy Azalea, and I love Big Sean as well. And even though you only see his mouth in this video, I think he does a pretty good job.
Yeah, it's very sexualized, Big Sean is in this video.
Super sexualized. I thought it was great. I thought it was hilarious.
I thought that, like, that added this contemporary thing to it, because it did. I thought that it felt like that 60s thing, but then it had a very contemporary sort of feel otherwise, outside of the aesthetic. And I think that the Big Sean thing, it was interesting that it was always that close up, and I think it was well done.
Mm-hmm. Now, somebody could, I think we need to explain this a little bit, because Doug mentioned this when the video came out, and I kind of glossed over, but I don't get the sexualization at all of Big Sean.
Oh, really? I mean, it's right on his lips and traps. I mean, it's all shoulders and teeth. It's that's sexy stuff. I mean,
he's whispering?
Yeah, that's true, definitely. Yeah. It's like kind of, that's how you objectify a dude.
But then on the reverse, Iggy Azalea is wearing, like, showing almost no skin. She's wearing, like, basically a full body leotard.
Turtlenecked out.
Yeah, she's turtlenecked out, like, as the French like to do. She almost went for the braid, I think, but backed it off a little bit. I think this video is cut way too fast. That's my only problem. There's so many great shots I would like to have seen played out. Did you guys get that sense? Not to dump it on anybody, but I just feel like it was a little manic.
I feel like it was, like, certainly cut too fast for the reason, too, of, like, it's clear they just kind of, it seemed like they just kind of ran out of stuff at the end, too, and they're like, oh, we better make this entertaining, because, like, once you hit the two-minute, like, mark, you've seen everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so True. It's just like, all right, like, now you've seen everything, and let's cut between it really quick.
I've seen faster. I mean, it didn't bug me. The speed didn't bug me too much. I thought that their performances were good enough to help drive it. I think that if it had been some other artists who weren't quite as charismatic, it would have been a little more grueling. But I think that it worked well.
Yeah, this is the first time I've kind of gotten Ariana Grande as an entertainer. Just because I nothing against the other videos, but this does such an amazing job of kind of showcasing her. And she's an expert. She's like a Cher Lloyd level camera mugger.
She's good. She's good at camera mugging. If so, you don't like how she like makes out with Mac Miller in that one video, in the Baby Eye video?
Oh, that was a little too precious for me.
Not Baby Eye. It's a different one.
The Way. No. It was...
The Way. The Way. That is. That's the one where she's all Mariah Carey in her voice.
Yeah, featuring Mac Miller. Yeah,
we'll straight making well. Out with Mac Miller at the end, which is weird.
There's a guy in the. In this video, in the problem video, that does a twisty arm dance.
Oh, yeah.
And there is another music video, coincidentally, and I'm not sure if it's the same guy. I don't know if anybody noticed this as well, but in the Kimbra 90s music video, there's also a twisty arm guy.
I think I noticed that.
Yeah.
I like the twisty arm guy in the first video.
Does anyone know what the name of that dance move is? This sounds like something Adam Alexander would be an expert on.
I love the dance move, but I have no
idea. Fucking Adam.
Just make something up, Adam.
Yeah, seriously.
Twist-a-rama.
Twist-a-rama. It's called the Twist-a-rama. It's made famous. I mean, Adam, you should tweet that guy. You tweeted about the twisty arm move, and then he retweeted it. I think that's him. In his screenshot, he's twisting his arms. So maybe tweet at that guy.
Yeah, we should definitely get him on. Maybe do a little talk to him.
Get him on just to find out the name of that dance, and then out of here.
But I wonder if it was an instance of like we need a twisty arm guy, or if it was like we're going through like the prop, or maybe whatever the prop house is for crazy dancers, and they're like that guy. We gotta have that guy.
No, it's part of the '60s thing, right? That was big in the '60s.
I don't think so.
No, it definitely wasn't.
Okay. Well, let's move decades to the 90s and talk about 90s music.
Yeah, let's do it.
People probably know Kimber from somebody that I used to know by Gautier. She's the woman who does the, who's you see her back, and she does a little twisty shoulder movement and has the female part in that. She had an album, I think, 2 years ago that did well and had a few videos from that, and now she's back with this
new... And she also did a music video that Zach worked on.
True.
That we talked about earlier.
Warrior.
Warrior, right, with Mark Foster and A-Track.
I think we're all children of the 90s in one way. Are you guys both 90s? You guys experienced the 90s.
Yes. The 90s were experienced.
We're all millennials.
And what did you guys think of the depiction of the 90s in 90s music?
There you go. It didn't feel 90s to me, really. It felt kind of like it started out with this sort of over-the-top. It felt like, to me, I'll just say I didn't particularly enjoy the video. I didn't enjoy the song that much. It felt like a combination of something that Eric Wareheim was directing but didn't direct, and then a more contemporary, like mid to late 2000s straight up performance video.
Mm-hmm.
So the motion graphics were kind of cool, but it didn't feel 90s to me. It didn't feel particularly new.
Yeah, it doesn't feel 90s at all. It's also got a little bit of Syndrome vibe to it. Are you guys familiar with Syndrome Studios? They did a couple, did the Rap God Eminem video and that Krayshawn Go Hard video. And I feel like this video feels a lot like that Krayshawn video at times too. Although Syndrome does a lot of practical weird stuff, and this is all green screen, it appears to be. But yeah, it had that vibe to it as well.
I'm going to go on record as a huge fan of this video, just to give it a little bit of defense. I really liked it. It looked a lot cleaner and fresher than something from the 90s, but I still got a bit of a Missy Elliott kind of a vibe to it if it looked older. I thought it was a really good video. I loved all the style changes and stuff. I loved it.
Well, I think they're I guess it's what... I mean, we're in 2014, and we've been in the era of kind of 90s nostalgia for a while. So I guess a lot of people have in their heads kind of a notion of what like the 90s looked like. I guess I don't know if how accurate this is going back, but I definitely got like a little bit of like an early 2000s vibe, maybe more than a 90s vibe.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of references in this. It's mostly going off of style, which is harder. I think if it was like Tamagotchis and, you know, Furbies and stuff. And there was, like, obviously they couldn't do that because I guess there would have been a lot of copyright issues. So I think it's a little more difficult to go off of it from, like, purely from, a style perspective.
And Missy Elliott, she was certainly around in the late 90s, but isn't she... I associate Missy Elliott a little bit more with like early 2000s stuff. I feel like that's when she was really in the front of everybody's mind. Maybe I'm wrong, but maybe that's what they got wrong. They were just like looking at Missy Elliott and they're like, let's just do what she does. And they're like, oh, wrong era.
Well,
yeah, they might have missed their mark a bit.
Kimba's like, I don't care.
It's definitely not us. Yeah.
Wait, was that Adam?
I was just saying it's definitely not something you would have seen like in the early 90s. And like I said, it's much too clean to look like anything that old, right?
I still kind of enjoyed – I didn't think it was the 90s thing. I guess that I did not take that into account when staff picking it. I don't know. I still thought it was kind of cool to look at. I loved it. I watch a lot of I was doing a lot of talking with Adam, and he was super enthusiastic about it. So I drew from that enthusiasm, and staff picked it anyway.
You're out of control here.
Freaking out.
It's an angry robot.
Yeah, I think you just went full robot on us, Doug.
What happened? My voice.
No, you're back. You're back.
Oh, shit.
It was cool though. I like.
No, that's what I was really saying. Whatever you guys heard.
It's like dramatic effect. It was cool.
Don't edit that out.
And I should say that this is interesting. I'm really excited to see the rest of Kimbra's music videos from this album because she is an incredibly versatile artist in terms of, if you listen to her first album, I can't remember what the name of it was. Vows, that's right, yeah. And it's a really interesting kind of versatile record. She's super talented and she kind of got this in with the Goche video, which you know was unbelievably popular in, you know, the 2011-2012 days, and I think she's got a little bit of artistic license from that boost. So I'm interested to see what she does with the rest of the videos from this album.
She's going weird with this one too, clearly. So I'm excited too. I think she's gonna really like pull out all the stops and go super weird, and I like that.
I enjoy it too. And for somebody else who is going well, has kind of always gone weird. But is just continuing to go weird and controversial, is Mr. Jack White, who released a music video for Lazaretto this week off his upcoming album, which, according to this little Amazon thing, is called Three Women, I believe. So Jack White, this is directed by Jonas and Francois. At least you have to watch it. It's basically a black and white video with Jack White doing a performance, but there's all these sort of kinetic breaking glass effects shots.
And I'm curious because glass effects seem to be incredibly complicated, and so I'm curious, Zach, from your perspective, are you impressed?
Yeah, I think it's an awesome video. First of all, the effects though actually weren't that hard, I don't think, because a lot of it was just comping on plates of glass breaking, and then. Yeah. Because it was on black and he was on black for all of that stuff, it could just be a screen transfer mode, so it'd be something where all the black gets taken away, so it's a really nice sort of key type thing that's going on. And then on a lot of that stuff where it's really intensely breaking stuff, there isn't a whole lot of distortion behind it, so it's pretty standard. But there are frames where it's just more of a still or something like breaks, and then you see like a little bit of offset like you would see through a broken mirror or broken glass, and those were more still images, I noticed. So that's something where there was some roto involved, and then just shifting the actual clip a little bit. But I mean, the effects were super well done, and I was actually talking with the Brewers about this video before it came out when we were working on Best Friend, and they were saying that the company Division, I don't know if you'll want to keep this in the podcast or not, but the company Division, they actually put money into the videos that they do, and they will actually do these tests and they've basically made the video already before they even pitch it. And so a director will have an idea and say, I want to try this. And they'll like rent all the equipment and film all this stuff. And so the treatment for that video was apparently what the video looked like at the end. They just Photoshopped Jack White into it, and so they like had already tested everything out, and it kind of shows because it all came together really well.
Oh wow,
that's insane.
That's more work than putting a PDF together.
Yes, and I'm jealous.
That seems incredibly rare. I've never heard of that happening.
Yeah, because it's like this. The Fleur and Manu video of the Gesaffelstein pursuit, mm-hmm. that was the same company. They did the same thing where they had like done these tests, and they put all this, like, I remember people being like, how did they find the money? Where did the money come from to do this? And I guess Division just pays money. Like, they put money into these videos.
Gosh, that makes a lot of sense. Because, man, Jonas and Francois, they really like, just every time they do a music video, it's like, oh my god, how is any of this happening? And I guess I looked at this Jack White video and just assumed when I see breaking glass that they didn't do it for real. I don't know why. That's stupid of me. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense that they just broke glass and then filmed it. So yeah, that's insane that they get that people give them money, or that there is money available before they even get a budget. How do they ever not get a video?
Right.
You know, Jack White is such a weird guy. You know, I don't know if anybody's seen the documentary It Might Get Loud, which is about three guitarists, Jimmy Page, The Edge from U2, and Jack White. And Jack White is by far like the most messed up guy in the room everywhere. But his music videos seem so kind of normal. I'm not sure. Not normal in the way like they're boring, but they just are not as out there as you might expect. I don't know if that's just the, you know, working with really good directors who are able to kind of control him, or he just doesn't care. But it's interesting to see that his music video output.
I can't imagine it being that he doesn't care, considering the level of music videos that he's put out, both as a solo artist and part of the White Stripes. I don't think it's that. Yeah, I was going to say, there was a couple of music videos that premiered on Funny or Die this week that we don't have in the database yet, but we will as soon as they end up on YouTube or Vimeo. But I'd love to talk about at least one of those. I liked both of these videos, but I think I like the Kevin Drew You In Your Were music video featuring Feist and starring Zach Galifianakis. I want to talk about this music video because I liked it. So let's do that. Here it is. What did everyone think? As everyone say it at once. 1, 2, 3.
Good. Great. I didn't say anything. Sorry. putting me on the spot here, Doug. I thought it was fun. I agree with Zach Galifianakis. It's a dumb name.
But, yeah, I had some trouble with it just now. So yeah, it is kind of a weird dumb name for them. But I love how they make it a joke throughout the video that it's a dumb name.
Yeah, it's good that he doesn't take himself too seriously.
Well, the plot of the video, just real quickly, is that Zach Galifianakis is making a dance music video for Kevin Drew featuring Feist. And he's like, throughout the video, he talks in the beginning, and then he kind of like starts training these dancers and during the video, and then they kind of do a little dance routine at the end. It's kind of part of this long history of like putting Zach Galifianakis in kind of guru roles. They did this to him in Tim and Eric's $1 billion movie and a few other roles, and kind of just letting him go, which is a tough kind of position to be in. I think he does a pretty good job with this one.
And it's also in a long line of Zach Galifianakis in music videos lip syncing the lyrics of the song. Before Zach Galifianakis did any Hangover movies, he did a couple of music videos, one for Kanye West, Wait Till I Get My Money Right, and one for Fiona Apple, for a Fiona Apple song. And in both of those, and then he also did one that was an unofficial music video for, I think it was like an Aretha Franklin song or something like that. But anyway, in all of those music videos, it's Zach Galifianakis essentially driven by Zach Galifianakis just lip-syncing the song and being funny while doing it. I think that there is some line dancing in the Kanye West one, and in the Fiona Apple one, Fiona Apple is in the video with Zach. But that happens also in this Kevin Drew music video. And I actually think I really love the way they do it. They kind of like, he kind of stands in for Kevin Drew. They look similar. They both have long hair and beards. And they wear the same black sweater, and they kind of bounce between Zach and Kevin Drew with Feist, and I think it's a really kind of fun moment in the video. I really enjoyed that part.
And if you want a little fact for the night, Kevin Drew and Feist used to date at one time.
Wow, that is a good.
I could see that.
Yeah, there was chemistry there, wasn't there?
It was.
I don't think they've done anything together since then. So this was an interesting thing, knowing that.
I thought you were about to speculate on their sexual relationship, and you didn't, and I'm glad. That's interesting. There is a lot of chemistry, and they actually, like, the portions with Feist and Kevin Drew in the video is more like more of a traditional music video. Like, there are elements of this video that aren't like slapstick Zach Galifianakis humor. And I enjoyed those moments too. I thought that they kind of blended in well with the overall video.
I definitely would agree. I feel like the Zach Galifianakis stuff was hilarious and funny, but then like when it would cut to Kevin Drew in like this big open space just kind of performing, and he had this certain like quirkiness to his like performance as well that was unique, and then just seeing Feist come in, like I definitely felt like a chemistry and like an empower like between them that was emotional, that was just funny just to see. And then every now and then Zach would like run through the back of the screen or something, which was...
Yeah, without pants on.
Yeah, which is just hilarious. But it definitely like had a nice balance between the two.
Totally. Face Again by How to Dress Well, which is a good video that everyone watched. And it is part of a series of music videos, three-peats. And the first one was Repeat Pleasure. And they're all directed by Jonathan Zgreve Muscat and produced by We Are Scandinavia, which is... Ben Fee's production company. So those are the setups. What did Adam Alexander think of this music video?
I really liked it, actually. I kind of wondered though, for people who might, this one seems to be getting a little bit more just being like shared a little bit more often. I'm seeing more people talking about it, and I'm wondering if it would really be a strange thing without seeing the first video from the series.
Well, I think
it wouldn't make a lot of sense, really.
Well, I think this is something that anyone who takes on a music video series can kind of run into.
Right.
Is music videos are, you know, not something that get watched in a series like that typically. And so that's a good point. Although I think even without the other one, you know, I think music videos are one of the only kind of forms of video that you can watch where you can really just see such a small sliver of a story and have it still kind of achieve some goals as a piece. And so, you know, I think that the kind of just overall vibe and darkness and kind of feel of this video, even if you weren't familiar with the previous video, I still think that it's an effective video, even without that knowledge.
I can confirm this as someone who did not see the first video, but did see this one. I thought that it was just kind of this bizarre but intriguing story. And it did keep me wondering like what was going on, but not in a way that was upsetting. It was like, oh, what's going on? What's going to happen next? What are they doing here? Who is this Jesus guy? You know, and it was really interesting. And then I thought it worked fine without having seen the other piece.
Yeah, I didn't see the other piece either, and I thought the exact same thing. I mean, the first couple of shots are just like really high emotion, like, but there's plenty of curiosity there to figure it out. So you kind of connect with the characters, and then all of a sudden you're just along for the ride. And it's a pretty long, it's like 4 minutes, 44 seconds, and it definitely held my interest throughout the entire piece.
I was like you guys, I didn't watch the first part of the series first. And you're right, there's a lot of mysterious elements, but that made it for me. You got the fact that it was an old guy who had died and they were carrying his body pretty immediately with a few simple cuts.
But you didn't know why, and that's what made it interesting.
Yeah, but you don't really feel like figure out why in the repeat pleasure video, at least as far as I can tell.
Yeah, you do. It's a pretty. I think in the first part, it's pretty clear. The narrative is not really that open to interpretation, as the second part would be. I thought it was pretty obvious.
Wait, what did he die from?
What is it?
Oh well, what he died from. Oh, okay.
Cut that out. Adam's no longer angry.
Edit.
But yeah, it's interesting. But I do think that is, while it. You know, could sometimes lead to like confusion for people. Well, I don't think it does in this particular case. It's also interesting that like when you do, with these kind of narrative music videos that you know series music videos, I think that they don't necessarily need to be watched in order and for them to still be like awesome. I'm gonna also cut the other video out. That I put on the list because Adam was dumping on it before the episode, so we won't even go to it. I think we should just go around the dinner table and have everybody say their favorite music video from this week, starting with ASAP Fairholme.
So can I pick the one from last week? Can I pick Problem?
Yes.
Then that's mine. Problem with '90s music coming in a close second.
How about that? You shit on it before, and now you and now
that
it's
wasn't,
just...
no, that wasn't me. I didn't shit on it.
Okay, that's fine. Cool. Those are good choices. Great choices. Zach, do you have a favorite?
Yeah, I think the Jack White video probably took it just because it made me feel like I'm really bad at making music videos.
Wait, but
you don't get like you don't get a budget for your treatment though either. So.
This is true. But even like outside of that, just I don't know. I watch something like that and I think I'm not supposed to make music videos. They should make music videos. Like I should go more in the narrative direction.
we have the sorry, I lost my train of thought. The Joy Away of Tongues. Video that says otherwise. You could have picked that as your favorite and said that this video makes me feel like I'm awesome at making music videos.
Yeah, but that's not being humble.
If we're talking about therapy session as or podcast as therapy, then we need to have positive affirmations.
So, no, sure. I'm really proud of it. I think that it came out great, and I'm very very happy with it. But yeah, like no, I think it's good. It's totally different though. Like the Jack White video is a music video like. The Tongues video is more of that narrative thing that we do, and it has music to it, but it's not like it works independent of the song, I think. And I think that it's less traditional music video than the Jack White video. Mm-hmm. And I respect that a lot about the Jack White video. It's like that's not really my area of expertise, and so when I see something really good like that I'm like, oh, I don't know how I would do that, or it's like that seems outside of what I can do at this moment, then it's really exciting.
It's fair enough.
John, favorite video?
Well, I'm not going to pick Joy Wave or Washed Out because that's too biased as well. I'm too close to those videos. So I'm going to go with the Kevin Drew video because I thought the Zach Galifianakis stuff was funny, but I really thought that it had like a nice clash with, or not clash, but like contrast with the high emotion that I saw in connection and chemistry between Feist and Kevin. I like really loved bouncing between the two. It kind of took me off guard.
Who totally used to bang?
I know. Now that you say that, it makes total sense. But like, as soon as I saw that, I was like, there's something like that I can't put my finger on, but there's something going on right there.
It's called tension.
And Doug Alexander. Douglas Klinger? Oh, wait, no, we got to go Adam Alexander first. Sorry. Adam, what is your favorite video, and what is obviously your favorite pair of J's?
Favorite video, definitely being the massive Banks fan that I am, I have to go with Drowning. That came out, I believe it came out on Monday. It had, I think, an exclusive release first, but I think it's still from this week. Doug?
It is this week, and it came out on Vivo yesterday.
Yeah, so just a cool video, kind of like a mirrored room with some awesome lighting, and Banks is amazing to look at and listen to, and that is my favorite.
Directed by Mike
Pisitelli.
Pisitelli, right.
Pisitelli.
There we go.
And one of those. Sure. Me. Me. Dougie. I have a favorite video from this week, and I can't remember who made it. The name of the artist, DJ Fresh, make you bounce. DJ Fresh, make you bounce. Directed by Mickey Finnegan. This I also am not going to pick one of the videos that the people on the podcast made. Although I probably should have. But this DJ Fresh videos is
yeah, you should have.
Yeah, those are actually picked. Those are actually picked. My picks, people really care what I pick at the end of this podcast. But yeah, I guess I'm just picking this one mainly because I wanted to make sure to mention it. I didn't give it to you guys to watch, to anyone to watch. But I know Adam watched it because I wrote a blog post about it today. Make You Bounce, DJ Fresh, directed by Mickey Finnegan. This is a pretty weird video of a lady being, touched on the butt a bunch at a party, and in response she beats everyone up with giant hands. So lots of fun giant hands. It reminds me a little bit of that Spike Jones Ludacris video.
Yeah, for sure.
And also the elements of the Michel Gondry Foo Fighters video. What's that one? But I still think it works because it's also got weird creepy molester dudes at a party who all get beat up, which is an interesting addition to that. So watch that video because I like it. Sweet, we did it.
We did it.
You guys.
So if you are listening to this podcast and you're wondering where the show notes are, where in the internet, just go to IMVDB, excuse me, IMVDB.com/podcast. And we've got all the episodes there. We've got so many episodes of the podcast featuring so many awesome hours of us talking to ourselves and other people. Like I said, this is episode 110, so we've got a lot of them. Each one of them has a list of the links that we mentioned, as well as the videos. And for a feature that you guys should check out, we're also going to link to a commentary that we put up this week, which is unbelievable, and that is Matt Bowman's commentary for Peppermint Tint by Riff Raff, in which he tells the ridiculous story of how he made this music video. This is the audio commentary for it. definitely check that out. We'll put that in the show notes. And thank you guys, Zach and John, so much for being on the podcast. This is awesome.
Oh, thank you. I give it 4 out of 5 toasters.